I'm going to start with the last sentence of the sermon, which is this. The last paragraph. Once upon a time, there was a Unitarian Universalist outreach program put together to convey what we were all about in a bumper sticker, which is a great job of miniaturization. And it was, to question is the answer. Well, to question is not the answer, but to question is the beginning of having a real answer. Most people, whether the left wing or the right, whether religious conservatives, religious liberals, devout atheists, and insecure agnostics, believe that asking questions is tantamount to treason. If you don't agree with the received wisdom, if you are questioning the people who must know better, you must not really be good enough to be a part of whichever group it is that you're questioning. I couldn't disagree more, and this is not a partisan political issue. All sides have a rigidity and fear open questioning of their assumptions. All of them. I can't think of any exceptions. I got that wonderful email from the Skeptics Society where they were arguing about if you were skeptical enough, could you be a member of this group? And if you had one moment of doubt about your skepticism, maybe you weren't really a skeptic. No sense of irony. I can't stand that. So today, and also responding to an email that Robin forwarded me about an inquiry about how pure we have to be in irreligiosity. I apologize for wearing a tie, and I'm going to talk about the Bible today. All right? So hang on to your hats, folks, or your kippahs, depending on your tradition. Wrestling. I believe in wrestling, in not taking received wisdom from whatever the source, whether personal or political or biblical. Nothing that you hear from anyone, including me, should be taken without examining it, wrestling with it, testing it, and making it your own. That's the only way we become moral agents, is by taking on and wrestling with the things that we are told. And what I want to tell you that may be shocking to those of you who either read the Bible or didn't or only saw the movie is that that is a firm religious tradition. When you read Genesis, God mentions to Abraham, and God always mentions this in a deep voice, so Abraham, I'm going to be destroying those wicked cities. Abraham does not say, okay, cool, where can I stand to watch? Abraham negotiates. He says, well, look, if there were 75 good people, would you still blow them up? And God says, well, I don't know. Well, probably not. Well, how about if there were 65? Well, I don't know. You're getting kind of close to it. How about 49.50 for you? Abraham doesn't just say, well, God knows better, go ahead, that's cool. Abraham negotiates. That begins a tradition of encounter and not accepting received wisdom, even from the highest sources. It continues with Jonah. Jonah gets this message from God. Hey, get over to Nineveh and deliver this message. And Jonah says, feet don't fail me now. And he takes off, gets devoured by a whale or a great beast, behemoth, however you want to translate that, and gets, how can I put this, regurgitated out, spat up on the shores. That's a little elegant, but still the point is Jonah doesn't just follow orders. After the Israelites have gotten across the Red Sea and have been wandering in the desert and get a little depressed, they build a golden calf, and God says to Moses, well, I think I'm going to destroy them. They've really gone too far this time. And Moses doesn't say, yo, thy will be done. Moses says, well, just a second. Can we talk? Did you really do all of those tricks just to kill them now? Did you send those plagues for nothing? Because that's what it would be if you kill them now. Did you kill the firstborn Egyptian just to kill the Hebrews now? Did you part the Red Sea? Did you feed them with manna just to kill them now? What are you thinking, God? And God goes, well, okay, yeah, sure. You got a point. Okay, Moses. This gives you the example that you get to question everything. While most Christian preachers will tell you that Jesus is the model of obedience and surrender, it wasn't easy and automatic. He went out into the desert for 40 days, recapitulating the 40 years of Hebrews wandering in the desert. And when he heard voices giving him the entire world, he didn't say, cool, what a good idea. He asked, is it God or is it the devil? What am I being asked to do and how does it comport with my values? And then when he is given the opportunity to die, he doesn't say, okay, let's go. He says, is there some way for this cup to pass? And if not, okay, but is there another way? Even in the Christian tradition, it is not an automatic thy will be done, whatever thy will be. It is, let's ask some questions about this. Let's examine in light of our own values. Same is true for Muhammad. The angel Gabriel comes to Muhammad and says, read. And Muhammad says, but I can't. And the angel Gabriel has to ask a second time and then a third time before the prophet says yes and reads. Even the Buddha, Gautama Siddhartha, is born to wealth and privilege. It couldn't have been easy just to leave all of that behind. There was a wrestling with attachments before being able to let go of those attachments. And we as human beings are attached to so much. We're attached to history. We're attached to fear. We're attached to rage. The most famous wrestler in religious tradition, as far as I know, let's keep Plato out of it for a second, but he was a wrestler. True. Plato meant his big, wide shoulders because he had built himself up into perfection as a wrestler, wrestling with people and wrestling with ideas. It's a good model, physical and spiritual together. But the most famous wrestling in Western religious tradition is certainly Jacob wrestling with either the Lord or the angel of the Lord, depending on your interpretation. And it's an important story. And I'm not completely sure what it means, but I'm going to come back to it at the end. Because that wrestling, I think, is very important. In a world that is filled with so much pain and suffering and insanity, we are called upon as moral agents to wrestle with every issue and with every question and not to accept anything as just received wisdom. One of the great definitions of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. As individuals, we do this. As nations, we do this. And I see this and feel this going on in the Middle East today, and it fills me with such pain and rage because it's not working. It's not working for anybody. And that's heartbreaking. There is so much anger. There is so much rage. There is so much death. There is so much untruth and half-truth and smart people doing stupid, destructive of others and destructive of self things. And there seem to be a lot of questions that are off the board, that if you ask them, you are a traitor to America, or to Israel, or to the Arab cause, or to the Jewish cause, or to whatever cause it is. And what I want to say is, there are no questions that should be off the board when it is so abundantly clear that the repeating of what we have been doing is madness. If somebody were winning, forget the morality. It's not working. American policy in the Middle East and Iraq is not working for America, and it's not working for security. The speeches that I'm hearing seem like replays of Lyndon Baines Johnson talking about Vietnam. I'm hearing the same language. We're destroying villages in order to save them. We're doing an amazing job. We are winning over their hearts and minds, and it's all terrific. And it's the press's fault that things seem to be bad, and that asking questions is really aiding the enemy. We've done this dance. This is not a piece of history that we need to repeat, but we seem to repeat it because we want to pull together. Well, after 9/11, Americans pulled together remarkably and wonderfully and commendably. In those towers, as they were burning and falling, race didn't make a difference. Religion didn't make a difference. Sexual orientation didn't make a difference. Human beings helped human beings, and Americans felt like Americans. As my wife reflected on about 9/12 or 9/13, as she stopped to buy American flags and was waving an American flag in the heat of passion driving down Ventura Boulevard, she said, oh, this time from Berkeley, from burning bras to waving flags, there's a sense of irony here somewhere. We worked together because there was a common threat. Well, the Iraqis are doing the same thing. And the body counts keep increasing, and they are not sharing the wounded and the maimed and the numbers of our sons and daughters who are coming back, hurting physically and emotionally, and changed forever. That's a piece of information that we're not getting and that we're not supposed to ask about, because the thing that is demoralizing our troops more than Al-Qaeda, which is probably not involved very directly, is the New York Times. I know all our troops are reading the New York Times editorial page every day. Asking questions is neither the answer nor is it treason. It is part of becoming a moral agent in the world, and that is our great responsibility. I'm not arguing politics. Should we have done it in a coalition? Should the French have signed on? Given the record, probably wouldn't have helped. But the first rule of theology and therapy is that not even God can change the past. We're there now. What do we do to end the madness? If ever there was an example, and I wrote about this in The Observer some time ago, I said that our occupation, that the physical part of the war would go well. However, you can use the term well when you're talking about war. But the hard part, the impossible part, would be what happened after the war. And the model was not Bosnia. The model was the West Bank. And that's exactly what's happening. The model is the West Bank, where escalation leads to counterattack, which leads to escalation, which leads only to more death. As Gandhi correctly pointed out, an eye for an eye, and soon the whole world is blind. And we are just blinding each other. The Israeli doves, I think, acted in good faith and offered up an imperfect state. But they were replaced after they were rebuffed by Arafat by the hawks, who have only increased, changed a cold war into a hot war, and only brought death and suffering to all sides. The Palestinians have kept in their tradition of never missing an opportunity to miss an opportunity. And so what happens is a suicide bomb begets a targeted assassination, which begets another bombing, which begets another incursion which begets something else, and soon everyone is hurting and bleeding and blind. It doesn't have to be like that. And asking questions about the assumptions isn't treason or self-hatred or anything like that. It's not working, and intelligent people have to come to the conclusion that when you try something again and again and you get the same result, you better try something different. And something different doesn't mean just sending more troops, or sending troops that have blue helmets instead of gray helmets, or sending troops that might call themselves Muslim. It's not working. I took some comfort from a biblical story that I was reading this week. I was reading about, because I was talking about wrestling, I was reading the Jacob story. And Jacob wrestles. When does Jacob wrestle? Jacob has a very active dream life. Freud would have enjoyed Jacob a lot. He dreamt about the ladder, and he dreamt about going up to heaven. But at another time, remember, Jacob has had this terrible fight with his brother Esau, and hairy man. And Jacob was less than commendable in many of the things that he did, and he and Esau became estranged. And when he came to come back to the land of his birth to meet his brother and his brother's tribes again, he wondered whether he would find war or peace. He was ready for war. It could go either way. He sent his family and his flocks across the river, spent the night alone, put a rock underneath his head as a pillow, and then began to encounter a stranger with whom he wrestled the whole night long. And it said that the stranger did a wrestling move where his hand reached under his thigh and spun him over and wounded him in the sciatic nerve. It is the first mention of sciatica in any record that we have, truly. And it's the reason why in kosher laws the sciatic nerve has to be dissected out. This is an homage to Jacob, and Jacob being wounded from wrestling all night. Well, the payoff to the story is that essentially, the stranger tells him that he's been wrestling with God. And then he goes across the river, still doesn't know what's going to happen when he meets his brother Esau, and they fall onto each other's arms, and the Bible says, and Esau covers Jacob's neck with kisses, falls on his neck with kisses. That's an interesting phrase, falls on his neck, because it could certainly go either way. That's also how a kosher kill is done, across the neck. It is a vulnerable part of us. And I was very moved by this story, and it doesn't happen a lot to me in Bible stories, because how are we to understand, not literally, obviously, I think, but seriously, the meaning of that story, of the wrestling? He's wrestling with his conscience, with the things that he had done to his brother, with the things that his brother had done to him. He's wrestling with the past and the enmity. He's wrestling with the future. Will it be a future of peace and forgiveness, or of unending war and hate and fear and bloodshed? I think that's the thing that we wrestle with all the time. We carry all of the baggage and all of the wounds of our lives personally, religiously, societally, and the great hope of that Jacob story is that if we wrestle conscientiously with our values and our fears and our hopes, there is some chance that we can let go of the baggage, that we can drain the wounds, that we can choose life and forgiveness of each other. Jacob and Esau, of course, are the sons of Isaac. They are the nephews of Ishmael. And today, the great questions are, from those generations descended from Abraham, Isaac and Ishmael. Whether we all fall on each other's necks with knives or with kisses. And kisses are not an impossible option. The hatreds that people have are not in the DNA. The anger is in our DNA. The epinephrine, the adrenaline is in the DNA. But where it is directed and how it is directed is not. We can find peace with our brothers, our sisters, both literally and figuratively, both personally and in the larger world. But there's another part of that larger story that bothers me. I began by talking about how Abraham negotiated with God to save Sodom and Gomorrah. But when God called Abraham in the middle of the night and said in that same deep resonant voice, take your son, Isaac, in the Jewish and Christian version, take your son, Ishmael, in the Quran, Abraham never asks a question. Never engages in any wrestling. That is not faith. That's dumb. It is our job to be wrestlers. It is our job to ask questions with open minds and open hearts, ready to let go of the terrible burdens that we carry of anger, of hatred, of old wounds, and to be able to say yes again to peace, to life, to our sisters, our brothers, and to healing and peace.